Live from Burbank, California, where Jesus Christ came to shoot his pilot, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now, this is his body, this is his blood, Mark Maron.
Oh, thank you. Finally, the respect I deserve. Good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, welcome aboard, need machines, pain sponges, the curious. The curious to see a show in its death throes. Look at that. Look at it flopping around. Somebody feed it. Give it some oxygen.
We're going to have witnesses to that, official witnesses for the live taping.
Yeah, help it out. We are. We're going to have, there's going to be people there at the execution. It's not an execution. It is just, it's weighing on me, though, man. I mean, it's weighing. I had this weird thought driving over here, Jim. I thought that I really understand how, when usually, I would say probably 95% of the time, when something is attributed to a disgruntled employee, that 95% of the time, on some level, that person is justified and is probably demanding justice in the only way that is left open to him. That when anyone, I'm not talking about going on a shooting rampage of innocent people, but if somebody divulges information about a company, if somebody bring a lawsuit against a company, and the company tries to write them off as mentally unstable or crazy or disgruntled, usually I bet you that disgruntlement has some basis, that all their fears have become realized and they are left powerless to react in the only way left, which is out of anger and I had that empathy for a minute, and I'm not talking about whistleblowers, but whistleblowing is similar in that, you know, usually they can rally people behind their cause because they're introducing information into the world that no one knew to show that the company or the military, whoever they're blowing the whistle on, was acting inappropriately. But I think that's probably the case 95% of the time.
And in show business, I don't know if for legitimate businesses, because I've never been in one, but in show business, you also have to sign these non-disclosure agreements if you're on contract, like, you know, for instance, if you work for Comedy Central or something, you sign something saying that you will never, ever say anything about the show, what went on while you worked at the show or afterwards, even after, you know, or you'll face, you know, legal problems. And so, like, you're threatened from the very beginning not to say anything.
They don't look at it as threatened. They look at it as part of your agreement. It's weird. I didn't sign one of those. On another note, before we get too weird into this, this is very interesting to me that the U.S., that the administration has decided to give the detainees at Gitmo the rights under the Geneva Convention, under Article 3. But what's really interesting is that Tony Snow is saying that this is to honor the court ruling, the 5-3 Supreme Court decision that's blocking military tribunals. But they have no desire to avoid military tribunals. Now they're just paying lip service to the fact. They're saying that they always treated the detainees well. And this is a very interesting thing with these asses. These people are just criminal in their desire to control and transgress the law. This guy, Stephen Bradbury, who's acting assistant attorney general of the Justice Department's Office of Legal Counsel, told a Senate hearing, okay, that the Bush administration would abide by the Supreme Court's rulings and that the provision of the Geneva Convention applies, but he, and I'm going to quote him, he says that the provision of the Geneva Convention says it requires humane treatment of captured combatants and requires trials with judicial guarantees recognized as indispensable by civilized people. And this guy, Stephen Bradbury from the Justice Department, says that's ambiguous and hard to interpret. How could that be ambiguous and hard to interpret? It means honor the laws of due process, honor the laws of, you know, charging somebody, or if you're going to hold somebody, to charge them. And then he goes on to say that the application of this common Article 3 will create a degree of uncertainty for those who fight to defend us from terrorist attack, end quote. They're just working around the damn language. And they're claiming that they always treated these detainees with the humanity they deserve, which is a lie.
They're saying giving them the common law rights is, you know, dangerous for our soldiers. That's what they're saying.
Right. That it's dangerous for our soldiers. And then they're saying that all they're trying to do is, this is Tony Snow at the press conference said, quote, to find a way to properly do this in a way consistent with national security, end quote. So it's like a loop. It's just like a loop. It's almost like the Supreme Court decision meant nothing to these guys. They're going to figure out a way to do these tribunals and honor the Geneva Convention. Man, we got Rod Nordwin, Newsweek's foreign correspondent, chief foreign correspondent on Iraq coming up next. That'll be uplifting. We got Jeff DiCarlo calling in. Angus McFarker will be here. Svetlana and Ed Burns, the director of the new film, The Groomsman, will talk to us.
Moon is a balloon, Mark Maron.
It's unbelievable, folks. I'm looking forward to talking to our next guest here. I try to keep up with what is going on in Iraq on a daily basis. It is hard to know what is going on in Iraq. There could be reasons that we don't even know about for why things are happening the way they're happening. Because apparently the press is being stifled. You always hear from this administration that we don't hear about the good things. Well, our next guest has always said that things are much worse than we can even assume in Iraq. And then on top of that, I mean, what is going on there? There are people being shot execution style in the streets of Iraq, you know, to the tune of about 40 people. A couple of days ago by mobs. You have American military soldiers. Five have been charged with a rape and murder. And as I said before, the press is being stifled in the war zone. Here to put it all in perspective is Newsweek's Foreign Bureau Chief Rod Nordwin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, so it seems like Iraq is in a disaster. I just want to address this thing that happened a couple of days ago. How could 40 people be killed in the streets of Baghdad? I mean, some of them execution style, and not be stopped by someone. I mean, what happened there?
Well, in that case, there was an attack on a mosque, and then Shia militias apparently retaliated and just grabbed, it was a Shia mosque that was attacked, and then they just grabbed whatever Sunnis happened to be in the neighborhood and executed them out of hand, apparently with collaboration from the police, or at least the police who are dominated by the Shia as well, looking the other way. This has been happening all the time. I mean, there were 40 the other day, but on the average, there are 20 or 30 a day in Baghdad several months that are killed in this way.
So they literally, I mean, it's hard for me to wrap my brain around it. When I see numbers in the newspaper of people who are killed in these type of execution styles or just these mobs, I always picture several different events. This struck me as one, you know, massive event where you just had a mob running through the streets. Are they usually like that?
No, in this case, there were checkpoints set up near the mosque. First of all, a mosque was attacked.
Yes.
By a bomber.
It got it.
Was via mosque, and this is a pattern of the Sunni insurgents, led by Al Qaeda, or certainly a large faction of which is Al Qaeda. And after that happened, the checkpoints went up in the roads around the mosque, partly for self-defense, but very soon that devolved into a situation where the Shia militiamen manning those checkpoints were just out for blood, and whenever they found a Sunni passing by, they just killed him out of hand. But this is not new at all. This has been going on now for months on a systematic basis. I mean, a few months ago, about 2 months ago now, people dressed as policemen, or maybe they really were policemen, whatever, they took over a major street in the center of Baghdad, less than half a mile from the green zone, less than a block from the main police station in the city. They took that street over and took away something like 50 mostly Sunnis. Actually, some of them were Shias as well. Well, they were released a few days later, and the Sunnis all turned up dead. And it's gotten to the point now where the Sunni insurgency, while it's provocative and it keeps attacking American troops, most of the bloodletting now is from Shias retaliating against Sunnis. It's a kind of cycle that just goes on and on.
Okay, well, at one time, I had spoken to you before about this, there was a faction within the police, I think they were called the Jamaat, who were basically operating at the behest of the Department of the Interior of the old government, who were literally a militia within the police force that were massacring Sunnis. Now, is what's happening now similar to that, or is this the what's left of that, or is it just that no one can control these police and that these tribal conflicts will transcend the government every time?
Kind of all of the above.
Mm-hmm.
That group hasn't been brought under control. The new interior minister has made some noises about reining in the militias, but we haven't really seen anything concrete on his part. There's just been this tick-for-tack cycle that keeps building and building, and things are just out of control to a point, but they're not. It's not actually come to the point where everything is disintegrated and there's all-out civil war in the streets. But you have to remember, I mean, 40 a day is, or 30 a day, whatever the number is, in Baghdad. Baghdad's a city of 5 million people, and it's not like every single neighborhood's affected yet, but it's certainly heading in that direction.
Now, does the government that is in place now, the new prime minister, is this something that they have no control over? I mean, is this? I guess what I'm asking you is there any way to stop the civil war that seems like is well underway and will continue to be underway? Because it doesn't. The government's not seeming to have any effect. Is it at all?
Well, to be fair, it's a new government, and the prime minister has only fairly recently got all of his cabinet in place, and he actually has been pretty forthright in condemning violence by the militias and trying to bring militias under control, and he's certainly making an effort. And he's making enough of an effort that even after this latest round of bloodletting, Sunni political leaders have said they're willing to engage in talks with the government, and they're still trying to find some kind of peaceful solution. So they're, at the same time that there are these forces of violence and retaliation, there are also forces calling for moderation and trying to talk their way out of this. And so far, the situation is not entirely lost.
Okay, but that, you know, that in terms of Sunni militants reaching out, is the overall agenda of the Shia majority either is do they have a genocidal agenda when it comes to Sunnis, despite whatever moderates or moderation might be talked about?
No, I don't think they do it at leadership level, and in fact their religious leaders, who are very powerful from Ayatollah Sistani on down, are urging moderation. And if they hadn't been urging moderation, if people hadn't been listening to them, we would see a really massive bloodletting, you know, on the order of thousands of people a day, you know, something that would make Rwanda look fairly mild.
Wow.
By comparison. Well, we haven't seen that. That hasn't happened.
Right.
So
well,
it could get a lot worse, and thank God there are some very serious concerned leadership in the Shia community that are trying to stop it from happening.
Well, I think what's interesting about our conversation so far is that, you know, we haven't even mentioned the Americans. And as I was looking at some news today and preparing to talk to you, and you realize that, you know, the Shia are acting out of control, and it may be in response to Sunni insurgents or whatever that is. But it is a sectarian conflict. And I started to realize, outside of an occupying force, does the American military really have a side in this war?
Well, the American military is being attacked by Sunni insurgents. They're not being attacked by the Shia, for the most part. So, in a sense, they do have a side. They're you know, sort of supporting the Shia-led government. They also don't want to see things devolve into complete chaos and see Sunnis slaughtered in large numbers in a all-out civil war occur. But in a way, you're right. They're kind of sidelined in this right now. The violence that's taking place is not aimed at them. It's completely sectarian in nature. You know, there are still American soldiers being killed. There are still attacks on American soldiers. But in a way, they're kind of dwarfed in scale by what's going on between, you know, between Shia and Sunni.
Now let's talk about I've talked to you before, and you've always painted a pretty grim picture, and you say it's even a grimmer picture than most people realize. Now, how much of this is getting reported? I've read some stuff that you have talked about in that they are really, it is almost impossible for a reporter who is there to report the truth to get embedded now, isn't it?
It's not impossible, but it's getting more and more difficult. It's not impossible because we, most news organizations now rotate a lot of people through.
Mm-hmm.
So people that are new are it's fairly easy for them to get embeds. People have been there a while and done embeds and produced stories that the military is not happy about. They're pretty shameless now about preventing them from taking up other embeds.
That's pretty amazing. Now, how about now that five U.S. soldiers have been charged with this horrendous rape and murder of an Iraqi girl and her family, a very young Iraqi girl, and now I guess today a group of insurgents have claimed that they mutilated two American soldiers as payback for this. Now, these events, they cannot be helping the image of the Americans in terms of just the general Iraqi population. What has been the repercussions of this crime?
Well, just two observations. First of all, the insurgents who killed and after torturing these soldiers, when they did this deed, when they tortured them, which was within the first couple days after they had them, it's not clear when, but it was certainly quite quickly after they got them. They never said anything at the time
right.
about this being in retaliation. This is completely, and kind of cynically reacting to the news of these soldiers and the fact that these soldiers were from the same company as the accused rapist. There's no credibility to that at all. If that was the case, they would have been trumpeting it from day one, and they weren't. And the other point is that this is a case that the initiative in this case came entirely from within the U.S. military. It came out because another soldier in that unit, when he got counseling, as a result of they gave counseling to a lot of the soldiers in that company after those guys were killed, and during that counseling process, this was on his conscience, so he unburdened himself about it. And the military reacted very quickly, and I have to say the reaction of most Iraqis has been, it hasn't been a huge scandal among Iraqis to the degree that Abu Ghraib was or Haditha and some other incidents were. And I think that's largely because the military has been fairly proactive about this.
Okay.
Has moved quickly against these guys.
Well, thanks for all the information, Rod Nordland. It's always great to talk to you.
Okay, my pleasure.
Okay, take care.
Thanks.
That was Rod Nordland, Newsweek's chief foreign correspondent. We will be back with Svetlana in just a second. His show is tied to Risky Teen Sex. Mark Maron. Risky Teen Sex.
Yeah.
Yes. That's that article about that. They say that depressed teens are more likely to have risky teen sex, right?
What other type of teen is there but the depressed?
Yeah, and there's some more in that article about how sex is, they can't decide whether, there's a lot of reasons they give for why they think depressed teens would have risky teen sex. I found the article kind of interesting.
Those are depressed teens who take risks.
But depressed adults as well have risky sex. Anyways, it's an argument I have with my father. Maybe we'll discuss it later.
Okay.
How's that for a tease? Huh? An argument I have with my father about risky sex because of depression. Huh?
Sounds like my childhood.
Yes, exactly. It is my childhood. Wait for that. That voice, of course, you know and love. It's our entertainment correspondent who lives here in Hollywood. She's not so new to Hollywood anymore. She's been here a little while. She is an old hand at entertaining. She works as a prostitute here in town and internationally around the world.
Global.
Global prostitution.
That's right.
Welcome, Svetlana Meskimishvili. Exactly. I got it that time.
That's finally. After 17 years, you're finally getting it right.
Did you hear it? So what's going on?
Well, it's good to see you, Mark.
Uh-huh.
I'm a little upset. This is our last show. But,
I'm upset.
You know, I had a rough week. I don't know if you can tell, but I'm more orange than usual.
Very tan.
Yes. Arnie suggested I go to tanning salon for my trip to Florida. Now I look like I have scurvy.
Arnie as in our governor, Arnie?
Yes, of course. He's always a nice cocoa shade. Yeah. He's like, Svetlana, you are deflecting light. Go get some tanning spray.
Did he pay for it? Did he pay
no,
for
No, he doesn't know. Please,
really?
Mark. No, I don't like favors. I pay for services. I don't pay for advice.
Okay,
you know what I mean?
All right, I get you.
I'm afraid clients will complain. It's like having sex with tangerine. You know what I mean?
I cannot
afford to lose any clients now. With you going off the air, you were my bread and butter.
Yeah, I know. I pay so well.
Yeah, I'm kidding. Yeah. You paid me peanuts. Even that is overstatement.
Right.
But this is sad. This is hard for me. I have severe abandonment issues, Mark.
Okay,
you know, why do you think I'm hooker? You think I came from well-adjusted, functional childhood?
I didn't think so.
No. My father left us for some ugly Uzbek cow when I was 4. My mother left us when I was 5. And my sister left me on steps of Kremlin when I was 15.
Wow. That's quite a story.
In a little straw basket covered in beets.
Aww,
yes, it was sad. It was sad. But, you know, Mark, it had happy ending. Gorbachev took me in, let me make nicey-nice on his big stain on his head, and I learned the tricks of trade.
From Gorby, huh?
Gorby, yeah. How do you know? Well, he always told me, Svetlana, be prepared. World leaders are horrible lovers. And he was right.
Uh-huh.
This exception of King Jong-il.
Who would have known that?
He's kinkiest guy this side of Japanese porn.
I bet that's true.
You. Yes.
Yeah.
I stopped seeing him years ago. He got fat and ugly. I tell you, you used to look like Paul Newman.
Wait, Kim Jong-il used to look like
very
Paul
handsome,
Newman?
Very handsome. Very handsome. And what an ass. It's all gone downhill.
Isn't
it's
he like 2 feet tall? Am I wrong? Is he?
It depends on your angle.
You can fit him in the pocket,
when
right?
When you're on your knees, everybody's taller. You know what I mean?
Okay. Did you see any movies?
I did. Oh, it's getting uncomfortable for you.
I'm
suddenly
okay.
Getting prudish, Mark. I say on your knees. We played Scrabble. What are you talking about?
I don't know whether it was the on your knees or on your knees in front of Kim Jong-il that was disturbing.
Both, probably. I did see a movie. I saw Scanner Darkly was the first movie I saw.
Uh-huh.
And I fell asleep after 5 minutes of animation and Keanu. It's a deadly combination. I swear this guy could make living as a hypnotist. His voice is more potent than Vicodin.
Okay, so you didn't like that one.
No, but then I saw Superman.
Okay, well, I saw that too.
You like?
I did. You?
Okay. Well, you know, Jeb took me.
Jeb Bush?
Yes, of course.
You were in Florida?
Yeah, I told you. I had a little weekend getaway in Boca.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
He paid, but didn't pay for popcorn.
Oh,
he
bastard.
Bought himself some Twizzlers and went straight to see it. Selfish bastard.
Yeah.
You know, I have to be honest, Mark. I had nothing to say about this movie. It was kind of bland. I mean, nothing happened. Superman is super guy.
Yeah.
You know, no flaws, no mistakes, no vices. His only flaws has no sexuality or talent. That's about it. Other than that, he's a solid guy. Big thighs. And that girl, what's her name? Kate Bosworth.
Is Bosworth? Bosworth.
Bosworth,
yeah.
Yes. All I could do was stare at her forehead. Huge.
Yeah, I didn't notice that.
Huge,
but maybe
because they cut the shots every time half of her forehead is out of the shot.
Oh, is that
it's
why?
Awful. Yeah, of course.
Because it's that
it's
big.
It's too distracting.
It's like the kid in Mask. Yeah.
That's sad. That's a little sad. And no sex scenes. What is superhero movie without sex, Mark? It's ridiculous. You might as well be playing with flaccid action figures.
You know, it's weird. You're right. I didn't notice that.
There's a little booty, you know, with the tights.
Yeah. There's no sex scenes, and also no one really dies except for three
happens.
Bad guys.
Nothing happens.
Huh. The music was good and it was all right.
But that Kate Bosworth, she's skinny like popsicle.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I thought men don't like skinny.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm not big on the skinny.
No, I don't think anybody likes skinny. And Kate Winslet, she's normal weight. You
she's
like
great.
Her?
Yeah.
She's great. Client. Client. Her husband is also very nice. They like to do fun stuff with me in the theater.
Oh, really?
It's kinky for them. I do Shakespeare. You want to hear?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that this too solid flesh would melt, saw and resolve itself into a new. That's Hamlet.
That's tremendous.
I
would like to see more of that.
I'm doing As You Like It in the community Kazakh theater or somewhere. I'm kidding. I think you're making
that up. Yeah.
Speaking of pretentious Europeans,
you
watch final game of World Cup.
I don't understand soccer. I don't understand the
We've
appeal.
We've been through this. It's a fantastic game. Italy-France was like the battle of the hairstyles.
Oh, really?
Yes, it's like flowing locks on the Italians, and the French were all black with shaved heads.
Yeah.
Except for Zidane, who I guess you didn't watch, but he turned out to be a putz with the headbutt in the last 6 milliseconds of the game.
Yeah.
Classy guy, headbutted Italian. Suddenly he turned into Mike Tyson.
Now that's the guy that's been at it for years, right?
And he's 34 years old. He's terrible because he's so classy. He's a family guy.
Uh-huh.
He let down his team.
It was
disappointing. And he's not client, so I don't care.
So he butted a guy in the head and hurt him?
No, not in the head, in the sternum.
Oh.
Yes, very painful to watch.
Because
I don't know what he said. He probably didn't say to him, great ass buddy. Probably not what he said to him. You know, they exchanged words, but it wasn't that.
Yeah.
I'm happy Italy won. So I've always had a very hard time with French clients. Let me tell you, Le Pen was a nightmare.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I serviced him 15 times before he realized I was Russian.
Uh-huh.
Then he told me to leave. He says, I don't take sexual favors from immigrants. I told him you are an idiot. I kicked him in the testicles with my stiletto and walked out.
Wow.
Yeah, he couldn't move for 6 weeks.
Now, what about other international types?
Well, look, you know, Italy is fantastic.
Yeah.
The Germans are no walk on the cake.
Yeah.
They're not. Merkel is high maintenance. something, it's like you wouldn't believe. She always wears these huge granny underwear. I tell her, Mirky,
eine
kleine Mirky.
Yeah.
Please, for me, go to Victoria's Secret, buy something more feminine. It's hard for me to get excited.
Maybe you should bring her something.
Well, I do, but I never get the right size. It's so hard to gauge sizes.
Yeah, sure, I get
you know?
It. Yeah, yeah.
And look, I'm not the client, but I have to enjoy experience, otherwise I can't do a good job.
Is that true?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. That's unique, I think. That's
That's why I'm up in the upper echelons.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, the Italians are great. What they can do with a cannoli, unparalleled.
Wow.
Unparalleled. Okay. Fun with food. Fun with food, Mark.
Okay.
Yeah, but I am actually going away for a few weeks next week to the Middle East. I'm being sent on a peace mission.
Uh-huh.
I got a call from Syrian president, you know, Bashar al-Assad.
Sure, sure.
He's crying to me, Svetlana, please tell him to stop bugging me. I said, who is bugging you, Bashi Mushi?
Uh-huh.
He likes when I say Bashi Mushi.
Yeah.
His father was the same way.
Yeah.
He said, the Palestinians, he said, and the Israelis, they are calling me, they want me to help them, and I don't know what to do. Poor guy, not the sharpest tool in the shed.
Yeah, he doesn't look very smart. Yeah.
I told him, Mushi, stay out of it. You know?
Yeah,
no matter what you do, they're going to keep killing each other. So stay in your big palace in Damascus with your cheesy furniture.
Yeah.
Horrible taste. Everything mother of pearl inlay, horrible. Gold coating on the toilet seats. I mean, horrible. He told me, oh, the Israelis, they're hovering over me with helicopter. I'm scared. I said, you putz. You're talking to me about helicopters flying over your house. I live in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I have four helicopters landing in my living room every night. Don't be such a
yeah.
Go rent the movie Heat. You know, Michael Mann. Learn what it's helicopters.
I've been to the Middle East. You're right about the cheesy taste. Now all of a sudden I'm talking about me. You go ahead.
Yeah, but no, please, please. The point is, Mark, it's hopeless. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm no expert, you know, but the way I see it, on one hand, you have professional victims.
Sure.
On the other hand, you have professional aggressors.
Yes.
Israel has power trip. You know, don't mess with us. We may be small, but we have lots of high-tech companies and we can blow your neighborhood.
Right. Yeah.
Right? You tell Israel has bad hockey team, they bulldoze your house down.
That's right.
They don't even have hockey team. You know what I mean?
On the
other hand, we have professional victims. The Palestinians blame Israel for their caca, never take responsibility. Not only that, Mark, the Arabs, they blame Israel for everything in the world.
Uh-huh.
Some putz farts in Dubai, they blame the Zionist regime.
Right, sure.
You know, everything to them is Zionist fault. Ahmed, you are ugly, is Zionist fault.
Right.
Nijma, you're failing math class, is Zionist fault.
I sense some politics coming in.
No, absolutely not. You know, what are you going to do? I'm trying to prepare so I can speak up when I'm there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Oh, but you know, Mark, I am a little late. There is a cookout at Warren Buffett's
today?
House. Today? Can you believe it's bring your own meat?
How is that possible?
I said to him, Warren, if you were not so cuckoo, you'd have some money left to buy produce.
He's in the poorhouse,
he's crazy. His children, both clients, both coach, called me in panic. I told them, don't worry. One night with me and Warren will have new press conference.
Okay.
Bill and Melinda will not be happy with such a life. I think they will survive with their $900 bazillion.
Yeah, so Bill and Melinda, they're not clients.
No, please. They're not sex. They're androgynous.
Yeah.
Saving the world is not worth $900 bazillion.
Yeah, I hear you.
A new tube top.
That
is worse.
Mm-hmm.
Priceless. Yeah. Eh? You like that campaign? I like that campaign.
You're too tough.
Anyway, Mark, you know, I do have to go and pack and get rid of this tent somehow. Maybe I don't know.
Yeah.
But I love you.
Yeah, I love you too.
I love you. I lust after. I think you're attractive in a very edgy, Jewishy way.
Really?
Yes.
So, and you're Jew as well, right?
Well, I'm part. I'm 16 different parts.
Oh, of course.
My parents were also very active, so to speak.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know how to say goodbye. I mean,
it's
I guess the best thing I could... do you want a free one?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Mark, you and your wife. I know, and I'll take everybody here in the studio. You guys are fantastic. You have been so good to me. Everybody right here near the microphone. I've never done it on green carpet.
I guess we're going to have to take a long break right now.
Oh, you are optimistic. I like that. These guys that talk big, they suddenly 6 seconds later back on. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Svetlana.
Thank you, Mark. Thanks to everybody.
All right. So we'll be back momentarily. And boy, that got me in a good mood. And everybody ready? Andy. Close off, everybody. Close off. Let's do this. He did not start the fire. Mark Maron. Wow, that was amazing, man. That was really great what Svetlana did for you guys. I'm sorry, you know, it was amazing that she got all four of you guys in so quick. I didn't mind watching, but we kind of ran out of time, so I guess I'm going to have to do that later.
What?
Yeah.
I was in the lunchroom. Something happened?
Yeah, okay, sure. Claim like you weren't here. That's funny. All right, yeah, it was good, though. It was very, very entertaining. It was like watching the circus. Hey, as you know, from time to time in the show, we hear from our foreign correspondent, Angus McFarker. Well, he's on the phone right now, but I'm not sure where he's calling from. Hello, Angus. Where are you?
Hello, Mark.
Yeah.
I'm in Camarillo, California.
Uh-huh.
The orderlies have opened my windows, and you can smell the jasmine and the oleander. The larks are singing. The sky is turning from orange to the most beautiful shade of lavender. It's a poem, Mark. I wish you could see it.
Hold on. Is this Angus McFarker?
Orderlies? Yes, sir.
Orderlies? So what?
I'm in a rest facility, Mark. A sanitarium. Call it what you like. A place where I can think and reflect.
What? Wait a minute. Whoa. I'm sorry, buddy. How'd you end up there?
Well, I was coming to pay you a surprise visit, Mark. Uh-huh. You never did pay for my reports, if you want to know. Never got a check from you.
Uh-huh.
Thought I might have a word with you in person about that, if you know what I'm saying.
I'm sorry about that, buddy.
Well, anyway, not a problem. I'm driving on the freeway toward L.A., and this wanker, this gentleman kept cutting me off.
You forced him off the road and beat the crap out of him?
He'll walk again, eventually. But his man sack might be purple for some time, though.
Okay.
I'm very ashamed.
All right. So I guess the judge sentenced you to this rest facility instead of jail. Is that how that worked? How'd you manage that, buddy?
Well, I'm a respected international journalist, Mark.
Uh-huh.
And I'm a lot bigger than that judge. A lot bigger. At any rate, this place is the best thing that ever happened to me. I'm so blessed, Mark.
Yeah.
So blessed.
Wow, man, you sound different.
Thank you, my friend. I am different. I'm better.
What caused the change, Angus?
Anger management, Mark.
Ah.
I took a good look inside of Angus, and there was a sad wee boy in there, just aching for a hug. You know.
Mm-hmm.
You know when you wake up every day and your pee is the color of a hooker's lipstick, you start to ask yourself, what's it all about?
Wow, that's great, Angus. You know what? I'm proud of you, buddy. Sounds like you've been asking the hard questions.
Oh, hey, like, what sort of man asks complete strangers to kick him in the balls? Hey?
Uh-huh.
A sick man, that's what. Crying out for help, for love, Mark.
Yeah, you don't got to tell me. I know what you mean, Angus.
You know, I've come to realize not everyone is a wanker.
Uh-huh.
Not everyone deserves to fill their trousers with butt biscuits. I used to say to some angry kids, "Oi, Nancy, are you going to burn that car, or are you going to stick your todger in it?"
Mm-hmm.
Well, now I say, "Oi, son, put your todger away. Go home. Hug your family. You know, an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind."
Wow. This
blind.
This is an amazing change, Angus. So what's next, man?
I'd like to work with children. I could see myself hosting a show like Barney or Thomas the Tank Engine. I'd be good at that.
Huh. Yeah. I think the parents would love that, Angus.
Oh, by the way, I'm so sorry about your program there. That is a tough break. I feel for you, my friend.
Well, thanks, Angus. I appreciate that.
Well, since it's the last time, could I share a few thoughts with your audience?
Uh-huh.
If you don't mind terribly, it would really mean the world to me.
All right, Angus.
Please.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, go ahead, buddy.
Oh, I'll always remember you, Mark Maron. You're a good man.
Mm.
Friends, we've only got such a small time here on this wee planet. We should make the most of it. Violence, especially not maximum violence, is not the answer. We should... excuse me, I'm on the phone here. Yeah, I'll be off in a minute, friend. Sorry, Mark.
It's okay.
As a species, we've got to learn how to... Oi, I'm on the phone here. Have an important conversation here. Wait your turn, please. Right.
Yeah.
We must find peaceful solutions
to
the tensions and conflicts that have been plaguing our... Oi! Wanker! You touch this phone again! I'll be giving you a colonoscopy with it! Oh, come on! You want this phone? Eat this phone! Eat this phone, you wanker, you bastard! Eat my phone! And kick me in the balls! Come on! Go!
All right. Yeah, I didn't see that coming. Huh? I thought he was really pulling it together, Angus there. I guess he's still got some work to do. I think he's about maybe halfway to full anger recovery.
I'm disappointed that we never actually hear him getting kicked in the balls. The crunches.
Yeah. You would like some real close-up mic work there?
Yeah.
Oh, God, I just got a twinge of pain. So look, Jim, I hear it's time for a little poetry corner. I think Jim Earle is going to lay some verse on us. So sit back, cats and kitties, and dig what Papa Earl is bringing us today.
This one's called My Street. My street. Sunny apartment. Two rooms. Wood floors. Nice apartment. Sunny apartment. My street. Historical center of the city. My street. 8 in the morning. Rum, orange juice, and Dixie cups. My street. Everyone lives in an LTD on my street. No one has teeth on my street. You lying drunken mother. What did I do? Shut up, you lying drunken mother. Bob's whooped you. I asked upside down the whole block 30 times this week. What did I do? You the liar. My street. Feed the pigeon. Sure, go ahead. Feed every damn pigeon in the world on my street. Mountains of pigeon crap on my sidewalk. Everyone yells on my street, even when they're saying, yeah! People drive slow. Boop, boom, boop, boom, boop, boom. On my street. No one ever leaves the street on my street. My name is Dude on my street. Dixie cups and rum in the morning on my street. You lying, drunken motherfucker. You want me to call Bob? What I do? What I do? You drunken liar. I call Bob and he whoop your again for the 40th time this week. You lying, drunken, retrobate, bad breath, spindly, know nothing. What? Ugly dog face state. What are you talking about? I didn't do nothing. Boom, 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 boom. F***ed up, stupid shrivel nose. Daddy, daddy, I have to go to the bathroom.
Get back in the car, honey. I'm talking with my friends.
You lying, drunk mother. Get away from me. I'm calling Bob.
Boom, 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 boom.
Daddy, I have to pee.
Ah, sweetheart, what are you making so much noise about? Just a minute. Everyone owns a gun on my street. Ambulances love my street. Don't pick her up by her hair. Let go of her hair. I can't breathe. I can't breathe. Let go of her hair. Sir, she cannot breathe. Then let go of her hair.
Boom, 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 boom.
Lots of things happen on my street. But most of all, I stay in my apartment on my street.
Awesome. Awesome. How much of that is true?
That's all true.
You told you that's real? You hear that outside?
Yeah.
Ugh. I've when I lived on the Lower East Side, I remember that. You just hear these fragments where you're like, what the hell could be happening?
Don't look outside, man.
Beautiful poem, buddy. We will be back with Ed Burns. Stay with us.
The button-down mind of Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Ed Burns, my friends, came on the scene in 1995 with his film The Brothers McMullen. The Groomsman is Ed's seventh film he has written, directed, and acted in. This film seems like the male version of a chick flick. It is an intimate encapsulation of a group of guys, some with kids, some without, all with their own issues and obstacles, and all old friends, and they're getting together for the marriage of one of the guys, and that guy's played by Ed Burns. Welcome to the show, Ed.
How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thanks for being on the show. All the characters in this film seem really familiar to me. I mean, I'm around your age. I grew up in the same era, in the same sort of quasi-suburban setting. So tell us about the guys in the film. Who plays them, and what are their names?
Yeah, Donald Logue plays the character that's my brother, who's probably the most tortured of the bunch. Jay Moore steals the movie as Cousin Mike, who's a guy who at 35 is still living at home with his dad and dealing with a serious case of arrested development.
He steals it, huh?
Yeah, I mean, he's so funny.
He is a funny guy. I started doing comedy with him. He's a nice guy.
Oh, cool, cool. John Leguizamo, another funny guy, plays TC. He's the friend who took off kind of right out of high school but returns with kind of a confession to the rest of the guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then Matt Lillard, in sort of a surprising turn, plays sort of the only one of this bunch that has his act together. And he's a dad with two young kids, and is the ringleader in trying to put their old high school garage band back together.
So now it's so weird, because when I got married, we actually did that. We all got together and jammed in a rehearsal space.
What is better than that?
Yeah, it seems real familiar to me. So now, are all these guys, is this something, are these guys based on real guys? Or because they all seem real familiar to me, and maybe every guy has those guys, but did you have specific people in mind when you wrote this thing?
I say it's probably about 50-50.
Uh-huh.
You know, certainly Cousin Mike was based on a buddy of mine, there are parts of Dez that are based on two different friends of mine. The rest, are pieces of stories I've heard or situations I've heard about and then kind of went in and then, you know, especially like TC's character, went in and kind of explored, how that might go down.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting to me that the way certain things have changed about being a guy and being at that age, and certainly in the film, what I thought was real interesting is that you're getting married and your fiance's pregnant, and in a classic movie marriage, even 10 years ago, that would have been a shameful plot point as opposed to one that is just part of the thing,
Yeah,
I mean?
Yeah.
And I think that there's probably a lot of things in the movie that are a little different from what it used to be like. But, I think that guys at the precipice of middle age, a lot of the issues are the same, don't you think?
Without a doubt. Without
yeah.
a doubt. I mean, the one thing that I discovered, I was the first guy in my crew of friends to get married and start having kids. And it was kind of surprising. I never really gave it much thought, but I was like, wait a second. We're all 35 plus. Why have we put this off for so long?
Yeah.
And that was kind of where the idea for the movie made sense. I was like, I wanted Paulie, my character, to be a guy who basically, he has a silent struggle, and he's mourning the death of his old self.
Interesting.
That guy that
yeah.
used to be able to go and drink till 4 o'clock in the morning or
yeah.
play in a band or play softball for 5 hours on a Saturday. Once you have your kids, those things disappear for the most part.
Sure.
So he's got to mourn that. And that's kind of, I guess, what the movie looks at. At a certain age, when do you say goodbye to the guy you've been for the last 15 years?
Yeah.
To become the guy, that's got to be a little bit more responsible.
Well, it's interesting because we talked to Donald about the film and a couple days ago. Which it's going to be a couple days ago by the time this gets on. But the thing I'm interested in is what do you think changed? Why do you think we wait so long? I mean, I'm 42. I don't have kids. I don't even know if it's going to happen. I mean, what do you think it is? Is it something about culture? Is it something about our vanity? Is it something selfish? Why are we waiting so long?
I think it's, sort of the post-boomer thing where
yeah.
it was like, hey, there's still a lot of fun to be had in your 20s. You don't need to get married and start having kids at 22 or 23.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the flip side of what happens, I know certainly a case with me and my friends, is like we were having a great time.
Yeah.
We enjoyed being able to pack everybody into a car and go for a trip and go snowboarding.
Right, right. But at 40, that's not so attractive.
Yeah, I guess there's that. But I think the reason you resist it is you get so set in your ways.
Yeah.
You got your habits and your routines, and you're like, wait a second, I've been this guy for 20 years.
Yeah, yeah.
If I surrender, I got to become a new guy, potentially.
Yeah.
Whereas if you did it at 23, I mean, what? You had basically 3 seconds of freedom.
Right, you might have regrets about what you might have missed.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I used to do a joke about how I used to say that I've lost a lot of friends to children. Now you go out of your way to capture suburbia in a light that a lot of people don't. You really embrace it, and usually it's approached with a certain amount of campiness or derision. But I come from it, and I've condescended to it. But you don't seem to condescend to it at all. Why is it?
My suburban experience was I have to admit I loved it. I mean, maybe the fact that I was a 27-minute train ride away from Manhattan.
Yeah.
Made it a little different,
uh-huh.
but You know, it definitely, I did want to write a love letter to the Burbs.
Yeah.
Especially in reaction to, you know, some of those other films that you talk about, whether it's an American Beauty or Todd
yeah.
Solondz' movies, that,
oh,
you know, that painted in a very different light, you know?
Very different with the Todd Solondz light.
Yeah.
I'm assuming you're doing maybe the polar opposite film that Todd Solondz might do.
Yeah.
That's funny, though, because you're both New York filmmakers. Do you find yourself at events with him? Are you guys friends at all?
You know, I met Todd years ago. Haven't seen him in a long time. But it's a funny thing, you know, it's like the indie New York filmmaker thing,
uh-huh.
like, I don't know where those people are.
Yeah.
You know, none of us seem to run into one another. The sense that there is some community is a fallacy, I think.
I'll tell you, I interviewed him once. It was one of the weirdest interviews I ever had in my life because I just couldn't figure out, where he was coming from exactly.
Yeah.
But, you talk about the Fellini film, Evita Loni, as an inspiration for this film. It's weird because, you know, Barry Levinson also cites that as an inspiration for Diner. How did you come upon the Fellini film? Are you just a film buff, or did you read about it? Did you know that Levinson had seen it? Where did it come up for you?
You know, I'm pretty sure I either saw it in film school or right after film school.
Uh-huh.
You know,
because it's such a weird, it's an unusual Fellini film because it's not a weird movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, those early films, they're surprisingly pretty straight ahead narratives, and it's funny because I didn't know that Levinson cited it, but, you know, Diner being one of my favorite films, I knew that Levinson had to have seen.
Yeah.
That film. And, you know, in a way, this film, when I saw Diner, I was like, you know, I want to make my version of that kind of male bonding experience of those old friends.
Uh-huh. So it's interesting that you both sort of, you both had the same inspiration. You had no idea that that's what it came from.
Yeah, interesting.
So now, how did this movie change as you began shooting it? Was it a different script when you first, how long has this project been sitting around?
You know, I wrote the first version of this script probably 4 or 5 years ago. I made a movie called Sidewalks of New York. It bombed at the box office. And I was like, you know what, I got to do something that's just a commercial, broad comedy. I'd just seen Meet the Parents, and I tried to write something like that. And, you know, that just isn't my strength.
Yeah.
Or my sensibility. So,
right.
You know, I didn't even really finish it. I just put it on the shelf. But years later, when I got married, and while I was prepping my wedding, you know, there was just like weird, unforeseen conflicts that, you know, I had with some of my buddies.
Right.
You know, one of my best friends, who still lives at home with his dad, didn't want to come to the wedding.
Wow.
Because I think he didn't want to, you know, have to tell people, I still live at home.
Oh, really?
So I was like, my wife said, look, why don't you love Diner? You know, you love that Fellini flick. Why don't you just do a version of your terrible screenplay like that?
Huh.
Do it just honest and real. And I was like, you know what? That's a great idea. So I took out the old script. And, you know, probably Jay's character is the only thing that survived from that original screenplay. That and the fact that, you know, I did set it in a seaside suburban town.
Right. So it's kind of it's interesting though because this actually these are your strengths. This is what you do.
Yeah. And you know you gotta. It's like somebody asked why. You know why not try and do you regret not having done that version of it? And I was like, you know, when I'm in film school, I aspired to be Woody Allen or Truffaut.
I
didn't aspire to be Mel Brooks. And
right.
No knock on Mel Brooks. Those are hysterical movies, but it's like. You got a thing you do, you know. You either play punk rock or you play metal, you know.
Yeah.
And
I'll tell you honestly that it becomes, you know, it's good that you're doing a movie like this because I was just talking to a friend that out of all the comedies that come out, so many comedies cop out. That at some point they go so far over the top that they lose all character integrity. And for you to do a film that is intimate and emotionally grounded, it's a rare thing in a comedy.
Thank you. I mean, like, and that is, you know, when I wrote that original version of it and I got to the third act And, you know, like, Meet the Parents is a film that I, you know, I love until they're in the backyard and things are on fire and, you know, and just like, oh, man, how do you write that scene? I wouldn't even know where to begin.
Or why write it?
You know, why do you need it?
It seems like they get scared. They're scared that people, that if they don't have fireworks, it's something completely ridiculous and over the top that people aren't going to find it funny. But, okay, so, look, I'm glad you made a movie. I hope it does well for you. It was great talking to you, Ed Burns.
Hey, man, appreciate it.
You take care, man.
Thanks a lot.
All right.
All right.
We'll be back with Mort Mortensen. Stick around, folks.
Now, why is there air, Mark Maron?
I don't know. That's Mr. Science. Appreciate it, though. Appreciate the question. I don't need to. Why do I keep responding to those things? Why do I keep saying that? Why? This weekend, folks, Friday and Saturday, 14th and 15th, come down to the San Diego State University campus. It's going to be amazing. We're going to be doing our show live there Friday night with call-in, 877-520-1150. That's on Friday, not now. Al Franken's going to be there doing his show during the day. There's going to be a big concert. Howard Dean's going to be there. Robert Greenwald. Who else? Maxine Waters is going to be there. David Sirota is going to be doing a seminar. Big weekend food and all kinds of stuff. Two nights down in San Diego. If you're not coming, come on down. You can go to Progressive Talk AM 1150 for information. Right on. Every week, folks. Every week we reflect in our times of sorrow as we look back on the lives of the recently departed. Here now is grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance. Oh, boy. You got something stuck?
You all right? Hey, are we on?
Did you know Sid Barrett died today?
Oh.
But that's, I mean, I'm just telling you that, the original Pink Floyd guy.
Money.
Yeah. Yeah. Get some, right? Money, it's a blast, right?
I know where you're going with that, but I like it.
Okay, what do you got?
Lyle Stewart, controversial book publisher. Mm. Lyle Stewart, the infamous literary figure whose company published the Anarchist Cookbook, died of a heart attack at his home in Fort Lee. Coincidentally, just after publishing the controversial volume, How to Make Your Dad Die of a Heart Attack at His Home in Fort Lee. In the late 1960s, Stewart helped launch a trend of sex-related books by publishing The Sensuous Woman and The Sensuous Man, followed quickly by The Disinterested Lesbian, The Sexless Egg-Shaped Person, and The Creepy Guy Always Standing Just Outside the Perimeter of Your Property.
Good books. Good Those stuff.
Very controversial.
Yeah.
Egg-shaped. Egg-shaped, sexless egg-shaped
sexless person. Sexless egg-shaped. Yeah, it was a rough one to get through.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, it's got to...
Oh, boy.
Stewart's company was launched in 1956 with $8,000. From a settlement, he won in a libel suit against gossip columnist Walter Winchell, who reportedly called him a bad egg and told him to scram. Those are harsh words back in the 50s.
Yeah, them fighting words in the 50s.
$8,000. Dollars worth. Mm-hmm. Stewart went on to publish the Anarchist Cookbook in 1970 after first believing it was just a guide to making egg salad without mustard. Yeah, man, that's
crazy.
It's insane.
I know.
A lot of problems at family gatherings.
Yeah, I got to think about that one.
Yeah. The deceased requested his remains be buried with a copy of his latest publication, How to Blow Up Heaven. Peter Smithers, model for James Bond. Sir Peter Smithers, who worked as a British spy during World War II and inspired Ian Fleming's character James Bond, died at age 92 last month when he mistook his folding sniper rifle for a cane and fell onto a deadly metal hat. You know, so I put two gadget props from Two different
Bond movies. Yeah, it's and great. See, I didn't know the folding sniper rifle. What's that from?
That's from, he had one in his briefcase.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and the, you know, the metal hat, that's the Odd Job.
Yeah, absolutely.
Smithers died at his home in a remote village in Switzerland, where he had retired in 1970 in order to get away from all those annoying shaken, not stirred jokes.
Yeah, of course. Sure.
It went on. Endless ones. Yeah. During the war, Smithers served in British Naval Intelligence under Commander Ian Fleming. It was there that Fleming first got the idea to increase Britain's budget for expensive spy gadgets by cutting down on toothbrushes.
Yeah.
The British are famous.
Yeah, because bad teeth. Yeah.
Bad teeth are over there on the island. After the war, Smithers served in the British Parliament 14 years until he had to resign in 1964 when he couldn't convince reporters he really didn't know any girls named Pussy.
Yeah.
Smithers requested his remains be, "Attention, listeners! Can you complete this last joke? If so, submit your Smithers requested his remains jokes to the Mark Maron Show blog immediately. I, Jim Earle, will read the top five jokes tomorrow on this very show. So come up with something funny, because I couldn't. Do it tonight. Submit your Smithers requested his remains jokes into the Mark Maron Snow Show blog, into the Mark Maron Show blog, and have the top five read on tomorrow's show. And don't be a dick about it." This has been this week's weekly remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, I won't be here next week.
That's markmaron.com for those top five jokes. Are you going to decide which are the five best ones?
Yeah, that's me. I'll do that. If anybody does it.
Of course they're going to do it. What are you kidding? We have a loyal following out there. Jeff DiCarlo is on the phone. He's been bugging me to put him on the show again. So stay with us.
Be sure to call if you have any questions. Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Here we go. Here we keep going. We're keeping going. We're keeping on, man. Keep on keeping on for another 3 days, Jim. Three days.
3 days? I thought it was another 2 weeks.
No. Well, you can come in if you want. I can't guarantee it's going to get anywhere, but you're certainly welcome. Right, Andy? As many of you know, Jeff DiCarlo is a renegade tax accountant. He's a BioWave analyst. He's a work-from-the-home revolutionary at the cutting edge of his bed. He's with us now for his last appearance on the show. He called us with an urgent plea to be on the show for reasons I guess I will find out now. Welcome back to the show, Jeff DiCarlo.
Well, thank you, Mark. I'm very upset. I'm just torn apart that you're being canceled.
You heard about it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I listened. You know, I mean, I am an active revolutionary, and part of that involves falling asleep with the radio on. So I absolutely know about that.
Well, I appreciate that, man. I really do. I appreciate you listening, and it makes me. I'm sad that you're upset, but I appreciate your support, man.
Sure. Well, it's the only station I get, but I'm really glad that it is. Now, I am sort of glad in a way because it sparked a new phase in my revolutionary career. Uh-huh. I had left, I'd been doing some home protests for quite a few months.
Uh-huh.
And I actually was out in the house. I left the house.
Uh-huh.
To walk around. I came back, and that's when I found out that you were being canceled. So I have launched a new initiative to stay in my home.
Yeah.
And I'm not leaving until you get back on the air.
That's crazy because I don't really know what's going to happen. Yeah. Or when
I do.
Yeah.
With this kind of power that I can mobilize, and I'd love your help because it is ultimately for you.
Uh-huh.
You could just maybe bring me some cigarettes and some microbrew to keep me sustained stay on this sit-down strike, this lay-down strike.
Jeff, I'd like to help. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Did I cut you off?
Oh, no. That's okay.
Right. I'd like to help you out, but it sounds to me that my part of this would be to bring you food and cigarettes to help you protest my being off the air. There's no way I'm doing that.
Well, you know what? Why don't you join me? You should join me. I have a futon that's out. Well, it's been out in the yard. It's a little musty because it rained. But we can drag that in, and we can conduct the show from here. And in fact, you know what? I have a friend who owns an ice cream truck.
Yeah.
We can put the futon in the ice cream truck.
Yeah.
It's got speakers. We drive around. We do the show from there. We take it to the people. We get the show out of the corporate fat cats over there, out of the hands of the corporate fat cats at Air America.
Yeah.
And we bring it directly to the people.
Well, why don't we just podcast a show?
To do what?
Podcast it on the internet. We can podcast it.
Is that a computer thing?
Yeah. You don't have a computer, man? I mean, you don't know what podcast is?
I have a Commodore 64.
Oh, man. So you're not quite up to speed, are you, Jeff?
Yeah.
I
kind of feel like it's a little bit... I try to live off the grid.
No, I understand. Well, you're way off the grid, I imagine. So you have no AOL? Does that mean anything to you?
No, is it like AWOL?
No,
that's
no.
That's what I went. I went AWOL from the Coast Guard.
From the Coast Guard?
Coast Guard Reserve, actually.
I had no idea. That's pretty exciting. What did that look like? You just didn't go one day, or how'd that happen?
Actually, I slept through our deployment. It wasn't much of a deployment. It was a bus. It's going to be a bus about 50 miles away. But
so,
I slept through that, and then I took that as a sign that I wasn't cut out for a military career.
And that was really the birth of the revolutionary nature of Jeff DeCarlo, was you accidentally overslept, and you missed your bus for your Coast Guard deployment, and you realized that was your path.
I don't believe in accidents, so yes, that was the spark.
All right. Well. Okay. So now here's our big plan: is that when I quit the show, mm-hmm. I'm done with the show on Friday, in your eyes, I would, come over to your house, bring you some cigarettes, some beer, maybe a burrito from the guy down the street, and we'd pull the futon. Either it doesn't seem like there's a reason to pull it up to your apartment now because you don't have an internet connection. You have no idea. I imagine what the
Well, the other thing we could do is just invite people over. You know, we could tell people to come over, bring the listeners to us. They could come over and they could, to sustain our efforts, to support our efforts, they could bring, some smoothies, they could bring some pasta, they could bring more beer and cigarettes, and we do the show for them.
Isn't that called a party?
And then we take it on the road.
Is that a party? Sounds like a party to me.
Well, you know, a party in the sense of a political party, a gathering of people, of like-minded people who want to change the world in a specific way.
As long as they bring pasta and cigarettes and beer?
Sure, and a Bota bag full of red wine.
Okay. Well, I think that sounds like a good plan for a night. Were you thinking that we were going to do the show every day? Wouldn't that get a little much after a while to have that many? I have no doubt that we could probably fit the number of people that listen to this show into your apartment. But I do think that'd get a little tedious. Now Jim is here. So Jim, are you up for this? I mean, if we go do the show.
Yeah, I have a question. There must be a high overhead to kind of, have this in your apartment month to month. Are you sure you don't need a little help, paying the cost of that overhead, the rent maybe?
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. The just as a donation, there'd be a sliding scale donation for people to come and listen to the show. Sliding scale from $100 to $50, no less than $50, and we would use that funding to support our home base, if you will, our inner sanctum.
Okay, so this is cool. So at night we do the show live for people. During the day we get in the ice cream truck and we lay down and we drive around. And
we'd also have to sell ice cream while we did the show. That's part of the deal of getting the truck. But you do get 3 cents per item that you sell.
Honestly, Jeff DeCarlo, that is the best part of this whole thing, is the idea that I get to sell ice cream. That is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a pretty good plan. I can't commit to it right now. And again, I appreciate your support.
Mark, you already sell intellectual ice cream in my eyes. So I think you're cut out for this.
That I see myself as a soft serve machine of intellectual ice cream. I do. Would you like me to? Would you like a twirl? Would you like a swirled cone? Because I can do that too. You'd probably appreciate that if it was like a number of different.
If by swirl cone you mean an inclusive discussion about relevant topics, then yes.
That's exactly what I mean, Jeff DeCarlo. So what have you been doing since I last talked to you? So you got out a little bit. Have you been working any biowave analysis, or have you gotten any flack for your tax ideas?
Analysis, I had a fight with the people at the laundromat where I usually put up my flyers. So I had to take those down. So business has been a little bit low. And believe it or not, people don't, if you go to door to door, they do not want to hear about biowave analysis. And those are the people that need it the most, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And how about tax work?
Writing off the yoga class, when you wrote off the yoga class, did you get in trouble for any of that, or?
Well, you know, it's a struggle. That's a big idea. That's a big new idea for people to grasp, especially people in the government, people who work for the Internal Revenue Service. But I see myself as a martyr. They keep threatening jail time and things like that. But you know what? I don't see how my life would be too different in jail than it is in my house, because I'm a prisoner of this tax system.
That's exactly
and
right.
I'm a prisoner of.
I understand that, but I think in jail that I don't think there's a futon option in jail.
No, that's true. That's probably true. Although I have another initiative, you know, because in jail you have to have freedom of religion, and people, you know, like Native Americans get to build sweat lodges. I come from a long line of Bohemians from Bohemia, and relaxation and lounging is a huge part of my religious beliefs.
Well, sure, I understand.
I think that I could swing that.
So you would get out of exercise, or you get out of maybe making license plates, or working in the laundry on the grounds of religious beliefs, and maybe just hang out a little bit and do some reading.
I would do some reading. I would make mobiles, and I would. I would counsel. I could do biowave analysis on some of the other prisoners, and I'm sure that my recidivism rate would be much better than the prisons.
Well, it was great talking to you, Jeff, and I will think about your offer. I'll get in touch with you, off the air.
Mark, this guy's just a sponge. He's just a sponge.
Yeah, I know, but I remember there was what? No, just wait a minute. Let me
sponge. I'm getting an auditory biowave analysis from Jim, is it?
It's Jim. Yeah.
Is it Jim?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, here's my prescription for you. You need 30 cc's of hugs immediately.
Will you come over to
me? You need a crash cart. if I can get a ride, sure.
Yeah,
my bus pass is expired.
Man, you can't even give a hug without a ride. It's pretty pathetic, really.
Oh, no.
What? I'm thinking about you. My thoughts are with you, Jim.
Okay. How does that make you feel, Jim?
As long as it doesn't cost me anything, that's okay, you know?
Well, I think that we've all been in Jeff's place before, and I think that returning there wouldn't be a bad thing. I'm gonna weigh your offer. I don't know if Jim's on board with it, but do you need a computer too? Maybe we should get you a computer.
Well, maybe. I mean, if I could put a TV on top of it or something. Right now, I just have a milk crate.
Okay. Well, we're gonna take care of it. And again, I appreciate everything you've done for the show and for our listeners, Jeff DiCarlo. Take care of yourself.
Thank you. And if anybody wants to send me some bed sore ointment, because my last protest, I got pretty. Pretty raw in the lower back region, that's a price we pay. I mean, Paul Robeson never complained about being incarcerated, so I'm not going to complain about a few bed sores.
All right, well, you can go ahead and send those to the address of the show. Take care, Jeff.
All righty. Take care.
All right. That was Jeff DiCarlo. We'll be back with more shows. Stay with us.
Is that a rash? Mark Maron.
Thanks, Jim. A couple of things here. Look at this. Today, for the fifth time in less than 2 weeks, Republicans in the House of Representatives today voted to block a vote on legislation to increase the national minimum wage from $5.15 to $7.25 per hour. Should be raised. And they just gave themselves a raise. Apparently, people like Karl Rove, Dan Bartlett, Stephen Hadley all got a cost of living adjustment of $4,200 a year, boosting their total salaries each to $165,200. These bastards have no shame. And also today, George Bush, the faux Christian ex-blow monkey puppet of the neocon death cult, said that he's all excited about this projected budget deficit. He's all excited because it came in less than they assumed it would be, at $296 billion projected, right? But it's still the fourth largest deficit in the history of America. The other three were his, 2004, 2003, 2005, and the fifth largest one was his father, $290 billion.
Woo, we're getting better at being the worst.
The sad thing is $284 billion surplus is what he started with. The bastard. The bastard! Looks like gas might go up to $4 a gallon, too. But look, what I wanted to talk about earlier, I had this conversation with my father about, because you were talking about this story a little bit about depression tied to teen sex. And I've got the piece right here, and I'm kind of looking it over. And it says, there are many possible reasons why teens with symptoms of depression might be more likely to take sexual risks. And this is quoting the doctor here. Of the part of the guy who was part of the study, youth who are both emotionally distressed and socially isolated may be more likely to seek or be successfully pressured into sexual activity. Really, I didn't realize you had to be depressed to be sexually pressured into activity. It wouldn't take much. You, Jim, to be pressured into sexual activity as a teen? What, are you kidding me?
I used to.
All you would have to say is, hi, you want this? Yes. Depression had nothing to do with it.
I used to have sex to depress others.
Wow. Well, good for you,
yeah.
Spreading that around.
It really did the job, too.
In the name of, and then there's another reason is in the name of some kind of shared intimacy. What's that got to do with depression? Or to maintain relationships that they value. I think you were right when you said that teens, you know, are generally depressed. And then there's this one. Teens may also use sex as a way to cope with their symptoms of depression. Finally, that explains my propensity towards chronic masturbation since I was 12.
Chronic.
Well, chronic meaning fairly regular.
Life-threatening. That's what chronic means, life-threatening.
It does? I thought it meant regular.
I guess. Well, chronic, I think, I don't know. What do I know? I don't know anything.
Doesn't chronic mean that you, maybe I'm misusing
like, you know, it was like chronic halitosis. I guess that's not.
Ongoing.
That's ongoing and non-stopping. Kind of, it interferes with your life, maybe.
I don't know if it does, if it implies that. Hold on. Why don't you just look it up, Smarty? Huh? Why don't we do that? But anyways. Despite the fact I had this conversation with my father, who has depression issues. I've had depression issues in my life. I don't think, though, that you can use depression as an excuse for bad behavior. Because I know people, I had this conversation with my dad about how, like, whatever you did in your past, like whether it's philandering or whether it's bad behavior towards others, you can't really say, like, well, I got mental problems. Because you still have to take responsibility for it, don't you? I think that's sort of an excuse. It's like getting off on an insanity plea when you're not really insane, you're just using it. There has to be some moral barometer. You can't just say that everything is a psychological problem. I think that all the different syndromes that they create or that people say they have,
yeah.
You know, work as a rationalization. And in some cases, human beings can go through their entire life without having any moral barometer for their behavior. Just the rationalization, like, I got this thing with my foot, and that means I can't work. Or I got mental problems, that means I had to sleep with all those people. Do you know what I'm saying?
It's a part of life. You know, depression is a part of life in many instances. I mean, everybody gets depressed every once in a while. Doesn't mean that you should use that as a rationalization for having just orgy or orgiastic sex everywhere.
Who the
you
hell
go?
Can get laid when you're miserable? That's the other thing, amazing thing about this study. It's like, is that, you know, how does that work when, you know, these people are, oh, they're all getting laid when they're miserable? Dude, when I'm miserable, the last thing anyone wants to do is sleep with me. I mean, how do you approach people like, hey, I'm really miserable, can you help me out with your I mean, what the hell is that? Can I use that thing in your pants to make me feel better?
Well,
huh?
People do, I guess. Remember looking for Mr. Goodbar?
Yeah.
Wasn't that, you know?
Well, I mean, you've got to put on a happy face. You got to put on your game face. You can't walk around moping because no woman's going to be like, look at that guy crying. I want a piece of that. I mean, am I wrong?
Some people are addicted to sex. Maybe they use sex like a drug to get them out of the depression.
But I'm just saying there's not a big pickup scene. You still got to have game, I guess, is what I'm saying. And I'm not. Yeah. It's very hard to have game when you're miserable.
If there were, like, depressed raves, you know, depressed sex raves.
Yeah.
You know, and people went there with full knowledge that that's what those raves were about. There are a bunch of depressed people there looking for sex.
Yeah, I could see the advertisement. Hey, sad sex, come get your rocks off.
Yeah, hey, sad sex. Come get your sacks off.
Come get your sacks. Here we go. Here's the short order news for today. Colorado lawmakers ended a 5-day special session on illegal immigration with a resounding approval of several bills that Democrats call the toughest in the nation, and Republicans say don't go far enough. The Republicans' proposals were particularly harsh against illegal immigrants, going so far as to require regular sex from their housekeepers. Senator Dan Grossman, one of four Democrats to vote against the measure, said, "I don't think the poor people of the state of Colorado or businesses of the state of Colorado should have to pay because we want to play politics with immigration." He was then dragged from the building and burned at the stake. Senator Joe Lieberman filed papers Monday that will allow him to petition his way onto the November ballot if he loses the primary election. His opponents for the primary nomination is fellow Democrat Tom Swan, who said, "Joe Lieberman does this from a position of weakness where he looks like a desperate career politician attempting to cling to power." To which Lieberman responded, "Okay, but how can I fit that on a bumper sticker?" Health officials say tobacco is predicted to kill 1 billion people this century, 10 times the toll it took in the 20th century. To honor the incredible numbers the tobacco industry will put up in the coming years, Philip Morris immediately announced the release of new Hitler brand cigarettes.
Hitler cigarettes.
Hitler cigarettes. Have a Hitler. You want a Hitler?
Smooth.
Yeah. Smoke the Hitlers while you got them. Hey, spark up my Hitler. Come on, man. You want to burn a Hitler? Hey, tomorrow.
Don't Bogart my ad off.
Yeah. Ari Berman from The Nation. Is he from The Nation? He is from The Nation. Smart guy. Washington correspondent. Jean-Michel Cousteau. Jean-Michel Cousteau. That's Jacques' kid. On water stuff. The ocean. Joel McHale from Talk Soup. Funny guy. Good night, Chief. How about some sad sex?